No man can ever tell your story. That's your story to tell.
Well, hello, dear listener, and welcome back to Making It Women in Film, a podcast where I sit down with women working across the film and TV industry to talk about their stories and hear all about their craft, career, and vigorous resilience. My name is Evita, and I'm so excited to bring this new season produced by Bonnie and Bra and LS Films to you. We're starting off strong with an in-depth conversation with Filipina entertainment executive Corinna Viston. For nearly a decade spanning between the release of Iron Man 2 and Avengers Endgame, Corinna worked with Marvel as their director of digital and creative content. She entered the company just before Brooke threw the veil to stardom, and the post-theatrical campaign she produced for them had a direct impact on that.
I knew it like the back of my hand, like how the MCU built and connected itself to each other and how every movie really helped push the overall story moving forward. And you know, I was still a movie geek. So at the end of the day, like I was just in awe and admiration of how they were able to really pull this off.
She's won a Golden Clio and 2 Silver Telly Awards, and she's now returned to her home country, the Philippines, where she's taking on a whole different type of beast.
We're winding down our day here in Philippines, in Asia, yeah. I just spent a whole day editing our show, K-Love.
K-Dramas, yes. Corinna is now the entertainment executive of Viu Philippines, where she's overseeing their first original series, K-Love. We'll get into all of that in a little bit, but first, let's go back to the beginning.
You know, growing up in the Philippines, so far from where movies were being made, even in the UK, like you guys have a really active film industry there that gets distributed, you know, your movies get distributed all over the world. And so I grew up watching a lot of English Hollywood movies. You know, I grew up reading Jane Austen and watching all the movies. I definitely had like a Western perspective in terms of the films that I watched, and it all felt so far away, you know, because it was such a different place growing up. We've had insurrections. We, you know, overtook a dictator, you know, when I was little. My parents walked and marched the revolution. And here I was, a six-year-old little me, while the revolution was happening and I was there watching films. There's tanks rolling by our house, but I was just completely like mesmerized by film. And it was really kind of, I didn't know what was going on in the world, but it was, you know, movies were something that I just kind of ran away to.
What was it about the movies that were really calling to you? Because obviously, yes, you said it was kind of a faraway concept. What was it that spoke to you?
You know, what I loved about it was, even if it was so different from the setting I grew up in, even if these people look very different from the way I look, I think that there is a universal story and plot that people fall in love with. I'm drawn to Jane Austen books and films is because everyone feels that feeling. You know, no matter where you live in the world, everyone knows what love feels like. So I love the universality of stories.
Do you think it was kind of a sort of escapism as well?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. You know, whether it was watching Mr. Darcy just jump into that lake or, you know, Marty McFly jump into that time machine, you would think that a little girl from the tropics in Asia wouldn't be able to relate to those stories, but they do. And I think that's the wonderful thing about film and, you know, storytelling is that you're able, no matter how different the circumstance is, you're still able to relate to what the characters are feeling.
Now, I do think, you know, most people love movies. Most people watch them with their families. Most people have these kind of core memories. But most people don't decide to venture into the film industry, even though they love it. When did that click for you, that this was where you were supposed to go?
I was in my early 20s. I had just graduated out of college, and I was actually first a news reporter. And I was a news reporter, and for 2 years, I, you know, covered the fires, covered the crime scene and all of that. And then I just really realized, you know, after being a journalist, I was like, as good as these very real stories are, I really want to go tell a different story. And so that's when I decided to go to film school and really jump into the deep end of the pool and go, I want to be a filmmaker. I really wanted to kind of go to storytelling where your imagination is limitless. When I was a reporter, I used to chase the story. But I think that the story I was most proud of in writing and in covering was were these going to the most popular islands in the country and finding the story of these little kids who were poor, who were very poor that they couldn't go to school, yet they built sandcastles and relied on the tips of tourists. And these European tourists would come and give them books of castles of Europe, you know, places that they never imagined would be real. And yet they were able to create sandcastles out of castles from Europe. And it's those little stories that when I was a journalist that really I gravitated towards. And it's not necessarily like late breaking news and, you know, hot news, but I found those stories really beautiful. And that's why I decided to shift into cinema.
Yeah, exactly. It's that slice of life, the small human moments that is also the most important part about cinema. And so when you were in your 20s and you kind of realized you wanted to delve more into the fiction world of storytelling, what was the film industry like in the Philippines?
As good as it is now, it was very limited. And, you know, there wasn't a lot of genres available. And I made the decision to move to California and go to film school. That's really what started my whole career in film.
With packed bags and kilos of excitement and ambition, she went across the sea and landed in the U.S. This moment in time will always be very precious to her. Not only did Corinna get her bachelor's in motion pictures and television, she also met her now husband of 20 years. A bit of a Jane Austen story herself.
He asked me to do his school project with him, and it kind of went from there, and we moved to LA together and we started our careers together.
Wow, that's pretty huge to move to a completely different continent, though, to pursue this. That's a major decision. What was going through your mind when you were going through that? I mean, it must have been thrilling, but also nerve-wracking.
It was, in a way. I was really just excited. You know, when you're in your 20s, you know, you have your whole life ahead of you. And so that's really how I felt. Like, I felt like I was finally starting my life in the path that I wanted it to go. And meeting my husband was just a really nice surprise that I had kind of like this partner in crime that, you know, went through things with me. You know, we did things together, and every job that we got or every job that we didn't get, we were there for each other. I, you know, packed my bags and went to the United States. But I think because I was such a, you know, I celebrated my big high school reunion recently too. And my rear book write-up had said like movie nerd. And then so moving to the United States and studying film and wanting to work in the film industry was always just kind of a dream of mine. And that's why when I got to Marvel, it was just every day was like a, you know, pitch me moment.
Yeah. we're gonna get to that point because that must have been mind-boggling. When you were entering the film school, did you know what you wanted to focus on? Because I find a lot of people are just like, oh, I want to do movies, and then they might go in with the intention of learning to direct, and then they come out as a cinematographer or an editor or, you know, all these kinds of different things. Did you have a sense of direction there, or were you just ready to take on what came?
You know what, this is what I always kind of advise people when they ask me that they're interested in film. It really doesn't stop with, this is what I want to be. I feel like for most people, it always changes. You know, I entered film school wanting to be a cinematographer, and then I ended up now as a producer. So it really, and it's the same thing, my husband joined film school as a producer and he ended up as a cinematographer. And I think it always changes too. You know, there's a lot of actors who start directing, you know, there's a lot of cinematographers who start directing, a lot of actors who produce as well. So I feel like the art form itself, there's a fluidity to the art form that you can kind of adapt to different roles. Yes, I mean, absolutely for me, I never thought I wanted to produce until I kind of ended up doing it and loving it.
Yeah. I was just going to say about the fluidity. I think because every skill is so interwoven with each other, you need one skill for the other. Like, everything complements each other and completes each other.
And then if you don't end up doing, you know, I mean, I think that if I don't think I'll ever be in costume or production design, but I still have this amazing fascination and I look up to people who do it because it's something that you appreciate as you're creating, you know, a film. And it's just something really kind of amazing when you can't do that skill, but you see someone master it so beautifully, you really kind of look up to that person.
Yes, exactly. What was your first job in the film industry? Do you remember?
Oh, Yes, I really remember. I remember getting out of film school and being one of the hundreds of thousands of people getting out of film school and trying to get a job in LA. And I remember having to apply to so many internships just to get my foot in the door. You know, I had like two internships at the same time. And I was working on set and I was doing odd jobs here and there. But I finally, I was doing this internship for the small production company, and I was picking up the dry cleaning and I was picking up the lunches. And I think the peak of it was where I really kind of questioned is if this is where I really want to be. It was, there was a stain in the carpet, and you know, the person working there was like, we need to get the stain out. And then they picked, out of all the interns, they just randomly picked me and they said, Karina, can you go and get a rug doctor and work on getting this stain out of the carpet out? And so there I was dragging a rug doctor down Beverly Hills, questioning, what am I doing? How is this connected to film? But I think that there was something where, you know, the assistant at that time had just taken notice of kind of this perseverance that I had, that I was not too small to, or I did not feel big, you know, I didn't feel, you know, grand enough to like say like, I'm not doing that job. It's too small for me. I'm completely overqualified to take the stain out. I just did it. I said yes, and I did it. And a few weeks later, she was leaving her post and she said, would you want to be an assistant and really kind of work at this company and get paid? And, you know, and I had already been working as an intern for that company for about 7 months. It was just the next step of just being a studio executive's assistant and answering calls and, you know, scheduling their calendars and really learning the who's who in Hollywood, who are the executives, reading all the scripts and knowing, you know, what are the hot scripts and what's trending. And so that was really my first job, was being an assistant and kind of learning the ropes and on how to be an assistant. But I'll never forget that journey where you had to take a stain out of a carpet. I guess it kind of puts a humility in you to say, everybody would like to think they're the next Steven Spielberg, but there's a humility that is planted in you and you go, you know what? I am not good enough to, you know, like I need to start from the bottom, and this is the bottom. If this is the bottom of what I have to do, then so be it. There's this respect and there's this perspective you gain from starting from the bottom and kind of working your way up. It humbles you to know that like there's a long path ahead of you, and you know, you should have the energy to continue kind of like walking the path and going up that ladder.
And I'm sure there's also like quite a bit of, you know, satisfaction and accomplishment with yourself when you then do get to the point, you know, when you get to where you're dreaming of going.
Absolutely. And starting from the bottom and working your way up, you have a respect for every assistant that you talk to, every intern that you talk to, because you've been there and you can kind of sympathize and know what they're going through. And hopefully you serve as some kind of, you know, story to them of like, well, you know, I'll get there too, hopefully.
Exactly. When you were getting into the industry, realizing who people were and how, like the process of everything, was there anything that surprised you about how the industry was versus how you'd been picturing it?
There's things that you're like, okay, it's easy to kind of critique a show, but when you're actually creating a show, it's really, I think that was my moment of it, you know, you have this ideal of what you want your show to be, and there are realities to creating it. You know, you don't have enough time, you don't have enough budget, you know, you're, and there's things that you have to kind of compromise in terms of telling your story. But I think that that's a good thing, because it's never going to be ideal, right? You're never going to have all the time in the world, and you're never going to have this endless budget. Even if you're a Marvel movie, there are limits to the budget. So I think that what the amazing experience for that is, you're grounded. You suddenly get grounded to how you want to make your show and your film. And then it's really kind of like saying, okay, well, here's what I have and how can I make it? And you learn to really be kind of resourceful and you adapt to the situations you're in.
But yeah, definitely. That's a really interesting point. I think it's good to have to be merciful to yourself as well. Then Marvel, when did that happen? And what were the steps?
Well, the recession happened in 2009, and then our company actually had to kind of close down. We're part of the budget cuts, but my boss, who's fantastic and brilliant, introduced me and had said, you know, Marvel's looking for this position. Is this something you'd be interested in? And I really didn't know I wasn't a comic book fan by any means, but I had interviewed with my boss then and we just completely got along. And he liked that I had set experience, I knew how to edit and everything. You know, at that time when people were saying Marvel, you know what Marvel is, but it wasn't what it is now. You know, I started right before Iron Man 2, right at the tail end. It was just amazing that I just joined. And I remember my dad saying, well, how many movies can they really make out of these comic books? And, so just now and how complex the universe is, it was just amazing to be part of this company that just skyrocketed to where it is now. And it's, you know, we were a small studio. There was like 40 something of us. And it's just, you know, and I think that it's no surprise to me that the studio is where it is now, because the people who are leading it are absolutely like deserve and have worked hard enough to be where it is now. But yeah, it's an amazing thing to kind of be part of something that just completely skyrocketed.
Yeah, because you came in, you know, at Iron Man 2, right? So that was just kind of on the verge. You know, it was getting to people's consciousness. I had a couple of movies out, but it was still like Marvel comic books. You know, now it's the biggest franchise in the world. It's the growth has been insane. And so tell me a bit more about what your position were like there, because I know you're a creative content producer. What did that entail?
It was really producing a lot of content to promote the films. What I really loved about Marvel is that, you know, they always encouraged you, and you'll always see this in the movies too, but they always encourage you to just think of the most out of the box ideas to produce, to promote the film. So we did short films. Taika had this idea of like, what if Thor had a roommate, and let's just run with that and put it on YouTube. What if there was just a David Hasselhoff music video for Guardians of the Galaxy 2, and let's just go really nuts with it. And no one at the studio ever said, that's too crazy of an idea. They're like, if it's cool and if we think the fans will like it, and their priority have always been the fans, and if they said, oh, that's something the fans would actually love, then they go like, yeah, let's do it. So I think that's something really amazing with Marvel, is that if it's a good idea, there's no reason why they would ever say no to doing a good idea.
Yes, exactly. And now you worked there, you know, for how long again?
9 years.
9 years, you know, so that was kind of in the prime, like where it just everything shut up. Do you remember when it started to really take off? Because especially when you're kind of in the marketing area of it, like that's where you see it.
Yeah, it took off with the first Avengers movie. Everyone just sat up and took notice, and, you know, it broke a whole bunch of box office records. And so, you know, there was, you know, they had come out with, before Avengers, there was Thor and Captain America, which were really good movies and such beloved characters. But when Thor first came out, he was a god, and Captain America was like this 1940s World War II movie. So it was good movies, and it did really well. But when Avengers came out, suddenly there was just this madness towards these heroes that like everybody just gravitated to this team, and all those little stories kind of like combined into one was really the turning point of everyone went, this is such a cool idea. They got like all these movies and put it together in one movie.
Mm-hmm. And how did that impact what kind of work you were doing? Because obviously there were much more eyes on you, you know, higher demand.
And that was the thing, right? Anything we did, even if it was to the short form content that I created, you know, people took notice. And if the fans didn't like it, they won't be shy to tell you that they don't like it, right? You know, we really had to make sure that everything we created, from the movies to the short form content, were fan approved. That, you know, this is something that the fans would love and appreciate and would love the brand even more. And everything from behind the scenes to trailers to featurettes. And then my favorite parts were like, you know, the short films and the documentaries and the docuseries. Those were so fulfilling for me, not just because I was a fan, but because people took notice of it and people found it. And crazy music video that we created that, you know, David Hasselhoff sang, that James Gunn and his friend had directed, and it had Stan Lee in it and all the Guardians in it. It had like 14 million views in like 3 days. And how do you do a music video and then suddenly, like, anything you do, we could literally read the yellow pages and people would still tune in to watch what it is. You don't want to mess it up, right? Because you want the fans to really still like everything that you create. And you just want to make sure the ideas that you think of are not just Kevin Feige approved, but fan approved.
Mm-hmm. And how did you go about finding that fan approval? You know, what kind of steps were you taking to assure that this was something that was in touch with the fan base?
I mean, I think our filmmakers, our studio executives are big fans and they listen. Every time we would pitch an idea of, well, what about this? You know, they would either go, or they would really like it. Or if you thought it was a really cool idea, you really had to kind of almost do a thesis defense of why you think it was, you know, why you think it would work or it would be cool. So, you know, it's not just like, hey, I have an idea, let's just do it. It's more of like, hey, I have an idea. And I think it'll be good because of these reasons. And I'll always appreciate that. It's, you know, everybody thinks they have a good idea, but it's really when you defend your idea and when you defend your creativity to say, this is why I think it's good, they'll either say, yeah, you're right, or, you know, okay, well, just keep fleshing out that idea. So that really was kind of like my experience at Marvel too. Yeah, it's more of like a, hey, well, what if we did, like, you know, we partnered with Google and we did like a short film series before Ant-Man came out of like, you know, what if we show the reason why, you know, Ant-Man goes to jail? Because, you know, you start the movie with Ant-Man coming out of jail. And so, well, what a short film where we really, we show what got him into jail. And so it's kind of really fun because you get to work with the filmmakers that way too, of like really expanding the story even more.
I was curious to know what Marvel means to Corinna now that everything has changed since Iron Man 2, since moving to the Philippines. What did she take away from it? This is what she had to say.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't a fan initially, but I've just gotten so attached to the characters. I've gotten so, you know, I knew it like the back of my hand, like how the MCU kind of like built and connected itself to each other and how every movie really kind of like helped push the overall story moving forward. And you know, I was still a movie geek. So at the end of the day, like, I was just in awe and admiration of how they were able to really pull this off. It's, you know, it's like, it's not just, you know, when I left, like 19 films or, you know, 21 films, it was 21 consecutive films with an interconnected storyline, which, you know, again, whether you are a comic book fan or not, you really have to admire the studio that was able to pull that off. No matter how much of a fantasy it is about people with superhero powers, to still be able to kind of ground an audience and have that audience relate to the characters and their journey, even if it's, you know, just out of this world, you know, superhero powers. The fact that they're still able to do that, you know, at the end of the day, like, you know, Steve Rogers having that last dance with Peggy Carter, you know, or Iron Man saying goodbye to Spider-Man, like, about it's this man saying bye to his protege. Like, I think that's the real beauty in what they do, is that they're able to ground these stories so that people can relate and still sympathize.
With all of the eyes on you, with all the fans, all the Reddit threads, you know, there's a lot of effort that goes into that, a lot of effort. So props to you for all of that, because I don't think Marvel would have been able to blow up without the kind of rebrand it got, because, you know, you look at what it was like as a comic book and it was very a niche thing, and now it's the most popular thing out there. It's completely had a 180 like image. It's wild. It really is. So well done.
And, you know, I think the fandom has grown too. Like, before, it used to be just like, you know, comic book fans, you know, who used to go to Comic-Con and everything. And now, just what Marvel has become, where you don't have to be a comic book fan to really appreciate the movies. And you have little kids. You know, one time I was speaking to Kevin Feige and Luis Esposito long time ago, but I had remembered. I said, you know, I remember growing up and being a fan of films like Indiana Jones and Back to the Future, and now the movies that we're making is going to be what Indiana Jones and Back to the Future was to me. It's to this whole new generation of children. Like, the Marvel films are going to be this near and dear classic set of films that they had growing up. And I think that there's something really special about that, whether it's Indiana Jones or even Harry Potter or the Marvel films. Like, I think that there's this beautiful thing, you know, I think the movies that are close to your childhood or that reminds you of your childhood, it's always so sacred and special.
Yes, yes. It's the legacy is going to be interesting to see. I think we're already kind of in that stage, you know, as it's transitioning between phases and that, but it's in many years, the way we look back on it and the different memories and connotations we have with Marvel is going to be an interesting concept. Like, I was such a big fan. I was in South Africa when Endgame came out. I was out in the middle of nowhere and decided to take a 4-hour road trip to the nearest cinema to watch it.
I really, the dedication of people to, you know, for their love for film and for Marvel movies is just really amazing.
You've done Marvel and now you're somewhere else. Tell me, what's going on in your life right now, Corinna?
You know, I think that one thing I always learned at Marvel and the people that I worked with was they always encouraged you to speak up, no matter who you are, whether you were an intern or the top executive. Like, everybody's opinions count, and they always wanted to hear it, which I always respected with the top executives there. They always wanted you to speak up. And they always wanted you to speak up no matter what your story was, whether you grew up in the United States, whether you grew up in Asia. I left Marvel. We moved back to the Philippines because my village is here. And they were so happy for me and they wished me well. And, you know, they thought it was really beautiful. But then I think the one thing that I took with me as I left, not just Marvel, but the United States, was that everybody's story counts and everybody's stories matter, no matter where you come from. And so I think that, you know, I left in 2019, and I think that's so evident in Marvel these days, too. You know, you have Miss Marvel, She-Hulk, you know, Black Panther, and all these people who have varying stories. And so as I moved to Asia, it was really important for me to really speak not just of the Asian story, but of the Filipino story. We're a small country, but I think that there is room. There should be enough room for, you know, Filipinos to be able to tell their stories no matter where it comes from, and especially here from the mainland, from the Philippines. And so that's the one thing I learned at Marvel, and I take that with pride. And, you know, I started producing content, not just for the Philippine audience, but hopefully for a global audience to enjoy as well.
Yes, yes, 100%. I think, you know, that's so important, and to represent, you know, your heritage and give a voice to that is so beautiful and important. What were your steps in coming back and kind of joining the film industry here in the Philippines?
We're a very young country. I think they said the average, the demographic, apparently the age demographic that has the biggest population in the Philippines, I think it's an average of like 23 years old, 23 to 26 years old. So we're a very young country. And so there's a lot of like people who are eager to learn and to, you know, kind of learn the ropes. And so it was very interesting working with people. You know, people are very, very creative. Not me personally, but there are a lot of people here who like to sing and dance and are very creative. I don't like to, I'm not very good at singing and dancing. But in terms of the creativity, there's a lot of really creative richness in the country. And so really producing the content, I really would like to highlight that even more. You know, we have such talented actors, we have such talented crews. And so I think, you know, coming back home, I realized that, you know, there's so much talent that springs from everywhere in the world, and doesn't just only have to come from Hollywood.
Back in her home country, where her story first began, Corinna is now the entertainment executive of Viu Philippines, overseeing their original productions. Viu is a leading Asian streaming service highlighting Asian stories and connecting different countries through the power of storytelling. For the first original series from the Philippines, Corinna is now producing the show K-Love, a show that follows 5 Manila urbanites in their 20s and 30s as they go through life and connect through their shared love for Korean dramas.
You know, their bread and butter has been Korean dramas, which again is like infiltrating the whole world now, Korean dramas. But then we also have Filipino, Thai, Indonesian, Malaysian, you know, Singaporean content. And so there was kind of something beautiful about like talking about the Asian story, and each country kind of representing our own. I started working for Vue, and it's just been amazing that actually within Asia, we're able to kind of share our stories. So, you know, Indonesian titles and Thai titles have been viewed in the Philippines, and the Philippines creates titles that Indonesia or Malaysia watch. And so I think what's amazing, and what I've been waiting for to happen, because I was always looking at Europe, like, amazed that, you know, in so many ways, Europe is just kind of, you know, you're all very united in so many ways. And I was hoping, and, you know, even when growing up, like, that Asia would be that way. And it's kind of nice to see that slowly, like, Asia is kind of coming together as well. And we're sharing our stories, no matter what country we come from.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's something so beautiful about, you know, that cross-country union of movies. It's you know, that's what storytelling is. It's a connectivity that breaches all barriers, the barriers of subtitles, you know. That's very exciting. And you're the head of originals for Vue Philippines. Tell me about, like, that must be such an exciting role. And what kind of projects do you have under your wings?
Well, Vue definitely likes to specialize in a lot of romantic films, dramas, comedies. You know, our viewership is about maybe 75% women. And a lot of it too, I do have to say that, like, it's the, you know, Korean dramas or the Korean entertainment right now has just, it's been so inspiring to the rest of Asia that an Asian country has been able to infiltrate, you know, the rest of the world, you know, films like Parasite and Squid Games, really breaking barriers of subtitles, as you said. And so it's really inspired us, the other Asian countries, kind of create stories that can be appreciated, not just by Asian, hopefully not just by our neighboring Asian countries, but also, like, people from across the world. What I like to do is really kind of help shine the Filipino story a lot more. And in the, you know, in this show that we produced, K-Love, it's about the story of, you know, four Filipino women who are intelligent, modern. It's the plight of the modern day Filipina. And what makes this special for me is that hopefully people who aren't Filipino can watch this and are able to relate and say, hey, that's my story too. And I think that at the end of the day, that's what we were talking about. It goes back to that, what film is, right? Like that, you know, you could be in another corner of the world and still be able to kind of relate and understand the story of somebody else, of a person living in another country who doesn't look like you, who doesn't, you know, who has a completely different culture. And so I think that that's what inspires me, is that to show kind of like that our stories are universal, that we're not so different from each other, that there's more similarities than differences, but yet highlight what makes our culture, our various cultures, special. So in K-Love, as you'll see with the four characters, it's very much kind of, I guess if I were to describe it, it's almost like a Philippine version of like Sex and the City meets Jane the Virgin. And so it's all these stories of these women, and hopefully people will be able to identify with it. But at the same time, like you watch Korean dramas, you're able to learn something about our culture.
Exactly. I think, you know, I never want anyone to feel like they have to globalize the story too much, because then I think you do lose the reason why it blew up in the first place. Like, take Squid Game. I think the reason that it became so huge is because of its very specific relevance to Korean society and those kinds of things. I think that's the kind of beauty of it, is getting that insight into these different countries and cultures and relationships.
Yeah, and there's little intricacies in every culture, and the best thing that we can get out of this is, you know, learning more about people's culture, right? You know, I know I learned so much more about English culture watching Jane Austen and, you know, all of these wonderful period pieces, and modern day UK productions too, these shows. And I think that that's the beauty of film and television, is that we're able to kind of export each other's culture and learn from it and appreciate it.
Yes. And so with K-Love, tell me a bit more about what it's been like producing it, and what it's been like to take on such a different project from, obviously, you know, content creation for Marvel. It's a very different mission you've got on here. And what have been, like, the most exciting part about K-Love?
You know, that's one thing that I am grateful for Marvel for, because, you know, Marvel came with this intense fandom. And believe it or not, with Korean dramas, the fans are just as intense. I moved back home after Avengers Endgame, and I'm so excited to see all my friends, my best friends that I grew up with, I went to high school with, and, you know, excited to tell them stories about Avengers, and they're all like, yeah, but have you watched Korean dramas? Like, and they were just, you know, and they memorize every Korean drama movie. My friends have learned Korean so that they don't have to read the subtitles anymore. Like, it's a whole different fascination with, and they take trips to Korea, they learn, they go to the different sites of where they shot Korean dramas. And I have to say that the fandom for Korean dramas, for Korean entertainment, is just as intense as Marvel. Like, you know, you have the ARMY from BTS, and you have all these other fandoms of just like, of, you know, Park Seo Joon, PSJ, and, you know, they all like text me like, is it true he's in a Marvel movie? And so I think there are more similarities, surprisingly, as I'm creating a show that talks about the Korean drama phenomenon. And it's really, I invited my friends to the screening, and they were all very, very like, they weren't taking it easy on me. Like, I've moved on to a different kind of fandom, but it is really, at the end of the day, it's acknowledging that, you know, the fandom is important, and you should really kind of be very precious with it and appreciate it for what it is. And it's funny, I've moved from one fandom to another.
Mm-hmm. Wow. I totally get it. I think the majority of the things that I've watched this year, especially for television, have been Korean. And I just think it's so exciting. It's so exciting how much stuff is getting put out there, and the accessibility, the influx in budgeting and things like that. You know, the support that all kinds of different Asian projects are getting is so inspiring and refreshing to see. So... I can't believe it, you know, taking your friends in there and you're just like, yes.
Yeah. And they're like, you have to get it right. And they do their weekly Korean classes to learn Korean. It is really commitment. And so they hear me sometimes saying some Korean words, like I'll say like chinggu or annyeong, and then they go, and then they literally slow clap me like, wow, you're part of the fandom too. So if there's anything, I think the preciousness of fandom, there's really something to be said about that. Like, it's quite admirable how people are just so in love with, you know, this specific content or a specific genre. And I think that's amazing.
Yes, it really is. And film and television, it's made to be viewed. And that's, I think, what you always got to keep in mind, even though it is also probably quite intense sometimes with all the feedback you're getting. Have you ever struggled kind of with that kind of feedback, positive and negative, like all the kinds of things you have to take into consideration? I mean, it's so much.
Yes, you want to do it right. You know, you don't want to disappoint them because, again, they've got high expectations. And I remember there was this one line in the show where one of her characters said she was going to go have Sunday lunch at her grandma's and watch Korean dramas. And I had some fans tell me, like, no, you don't watch Korean dramas with your grandma. You know, and even down to who you watch it with. I was like, oh, okay. Let me do some research on that. And it's true. Like, what's amazing about Korean dramas is that I've discovered that there are grandmothers that watch Korean dramas. There are women in their 70s that have been watching Korean dramas on VHS. And so I happily reported back to my friends. I'm like, no, actually, there have been more original fans than you guys. Someone beat you to how long they've been watching Korean dramas. So yeah, it is. It's very, very, you have to handle it with care, and you have to respect it too.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. What would you say has been your proudest moment in your career?
I think it's two things. One is that I was privileged enough to be part of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. I'll always take that with me as just this pinch me moment of, I can't believe I was part of something so big and grand and amazing. And then the second is that I was still able to do something, that I'm still doing something after Marvel, like life after Marvel, you know, and I think that I'll really cherish that too, because you'd think that I would have been really happy with the highlight of my life being Marvel, that I got to be part of it. But the fact that I'm able to kind of create this career and create more stories post Marvel, is a highlight of mine that I love, because I think, What could be better than Marvel? And I'm surprised that life after Marvel has just been as exciting and as wonderful and fulfilling.
That's amazing. All right, I think it's time that we move into some movie show recommendations, a little bit of a roundup, some rapid fire, and I'm going to ask you to just, you know, give me one. I know it's always difficult. It's always going to be difficult to give one answer, but I'm asking you here, and just going to say what's on the top of your mind. So, Corinna, can you give me one movie or show that's inspired you recently?
The Bear on Hulu. I thought that's a really, it came from nowhere. I just kind of watched it and went, sure, it's a movie about, it's a show about food and chefs. But I was just so inspired by it, by how completely fresh their take was on, you know, I think there's so many shows and films that have done food and the chef life before, but this one did it in such a fresh, different, innovative way that I thought that mm-hmm. that's amazing. Mm-hmm.
Definitely. What's one movie or show that's your guilty pleasure?
Bridgerton.
No explanation needed.
I don't know how you feel about Bridgerton, you know, being in the UK. I am quite curious to see what you think of it.
I haven't watched it. I really haven't. I respect the people who are into it, but I think it's just a can of worms. I don't know. Maybe I'll love it, and maybe I'll just, like, be a... I don't know. I am very neutral. I'm Switzerland. I'm Bridgerton. Definitely.
You know, I am a complete fan of English period pieces, like every Jane Austen that has been, you know, from the Colin Firth to the, you know, Keira Knightley ones. I love Sense and Sensibility, love it. So I love those period pieces, and I never thought I would like Bridgerton, but weirdly enough, I really do, and now I'm not ashamed to say it.
amazing. Well, at least that's good, you know. I think, again, it's made to be viewed and it's made to be enjoyed. That's always the most important part for me.
And I think there's something to be said about, like, especially when, I mean, we've just come out of a pandemic, and, you know, the world's gone crazy, and there's something to be said about feel good content like Bridgerton.
100%. Yeah, I completely agree. What about a movie or a show that you would love to experience for the first time again?
I would say Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. You know, watching that movie for the first time blows your mind away. And then you can rewatch it, but you know how it ends and what happens. And so I would love to just watch it again, not remembering what happens in that movie.
That's a good one. That's a good pick. Mm-hmm. What's your top advice to other aspiring women in film right now who might be listening? Specifically, perhaps other women in Asia who are listening and seeing this kind of new expanding.
You know, and before I answer that, I just want to give, like, hats off to you guys, like, Women in Film podcast. Like, I love this. I love that we're all collectively talking about our experiences together, because it's something really wonderful that we need to kind of just share more of our stories together. But so I guess one thing that I would like to kind of give is, you know, I think as women, I don't know if this is for all women, but I know definitely being a woman in Asia, which we tend to be very non-confrontational, women tend to say sorry a lot or apologize for things that they do, or tend to be shy about what they're doing. And I think that it's just remembering that our voice is just as good and as men's voice. You know, it's the same thing. If you're a female director, your vision and your perspective is just as good and precious as of a male director. Like, I just don't think there should be any kind of doubt that, like, and there could be less women filmmakers in the world, and I hope that that's changing. But I think, sorry, here you go again, apologizing. But no, I think that as a woman filmmaker, you should stand loud and proud of your perspective, of the story that you have to give to the world, because it's just as good, if not better. Your insights on the world as a woman is just irreplaceable. Like, no man can ever tell your story. That's your story to tell.
If yourself in your 20s, before you moved to California, could see you now, what do you think she would, how do you think she would react?
Probably in disbelief, because I think I was very, very non-confrontational and very, a lot more passive and shy. And I think that through the years, I really kind of learned to find my voice. If you're blessed to know your voice, to know what your voice is, that's amazing. Hang on to that and, you know, shout it out to the world. If you're a filmmaker, if you're a female filmmaker and you're still finding that voice, you'll get there. And that's where I was 20 years ago, is finding my voice, finding my perspective. You know, and I think 20 years ago when I first moved to Hollywood, I was just embracing my everything of just like, I can't believe I'm here, and I'm embracing everything of Hollywood, you know, that I was there and working. But then it came full circle 20 years later to go, you know what, this is who I am. And it's not in Hollywood, and my story is here, and this is the story we can tell, even if we're not in Hollywood. You know, every corner of the world, your story can still be told.
Ah, oh, that's beautiful. That's beautiful. I'm so excited to see what you've got going on and what's going to come out of the Philippines. It's so exciting. Now, lastly, we always ask this because, you know, that's what we do here. We're, you know, uplifting other women and talking about our experiences and inspirations. Can you give me a shout out of a woman in the industry that inspires you?
I would have to say it would be Victoria Alonso, the top executive at Marvel. I love her. I've always looked up to her. And whether you're Kate Blanchett or the assistant or the intern, she sees you and she'll talk to you. And it doesn't matter who you are. She is there for you. And she was there for me as another female in the industry, as a mom. And everybody that I know thinks the world of her. So 100% she deserves to be where she is. She's an amazing person.
Such an amazing woman, as is yourself. Now, lastly, is there anything you want to plug, promote, socials, projects?
So the show that I produced is called K-Love. And it is showing in 16 countries all around Asia. All around Asia, the Middle East, and parts of Africa. And it's the story of women as they navigate life decisions from, you know, do I want to be a mother? Where's my purpose in life? You know, who am I really? What am I supposed to do? I love that we talk about all these stories that are very, very significant to the modern day woman, but yet kind of represent our country and our culture. And I hope that people watch it and learn more about and appreciate our culture, but also see that we all go through the same things. We all go through the same things in life, and we all, you know, wonder about and ponder about the same thoughts and questions.
Oh, you thought this ended now? No. This is season 3, and we're doing things a little bit differently this season. See, after every episode, we will be doing a roundtable with the women working on this production, where we can get into our takeaways from the episode and talk more about topical things in the industry. Now, you already know me, but let me rip the veil off a little bit and introduce you to our researcher, who's also an excellent writer, and completely coincidentally, my best friend, Lauren. Hey, Lauren.
Hey, it's good talking to you. Haven't seen you in forever.
I know, it's been so long. I didn't even see you yesterday or anything. Now, our head of production, Pega, sadly can't join us this time as she's off sick, but hopefully you'll all get to meet her next week. Introductions are always super awkward, and in order to, you know, break the ice a little, get our listeners to know you more, I've got some questions. Don't think too hard about them. Just, you know, speak your mind. What comes to your head? You know, just be honest.
I will.
What was the first movie you remember watching? For me, I have a visceral memory of being in the parking lot after watching Charlotte's Web, but I remember watching B-Movie.
The B-Movie?
The B-Movie.
Honestly, and I do think about this like kind of frequently. I just have this very, I don't think it was the first movie I ever remember seeing, but I do have like a really strange memory of watching Chicken Little, the alien invasion one, in the movie theater. But this must have been ages ago, like ages and ages and ages. And I honestly don't remember a lot of it. But it's just like there, you know, like I don't think I made it up, but I must have been really, really little.
What's a movie that traumatized you as a kid?
Coraline. We had to leave the theater because it was so bad. I did not. I still can't watch it. I tried. I can't.
A scary, scary movie was the one that traumatized me. Not because of the scariness, but because of the nudity, and I was very Christian, and I was like, oh my god, that's a boob. I know the answer to this. But what is your favorite, of all time, could not live without movie?
I would have to say Baywatch.
I was like, what?
No, honestly, I'm just kidding. It is The Mummy, 1999, starring Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz.
Who directed The Mummy?
I actually don't know. I've actually never looked into that.
Yeah. Stephen Sommers. Do you remember the first time you watched it?
The first time I watched it was, it was around, it was a couple of days after Christmas because I had received the entire, like, Mummy movie trilogy package for Christmas because over Thanksgiving break, we went to Universal Studios, and obviously the Mummy ride is there, and obviously I was, like, super obsessed with Egyptology and everything, and I was obsessed with the ride just because of what it was. And then I found out that it was a movie, and I was like, oh my god, you know, no stopping me now. And the thing is, we just didn't have it anywhere, so I, you know, couldn't really watch it at the time or anything. So then, obviously, I got those for Christmas, and I watched it over and over and over and over again in the living room, because it was the best thing ever. It was amazing.
What about it? It is that, like, you know, makes it your movie.
I think it was just something really, you know, it was just really appealing to me because it was like everything I had wanted to see was there, you know. And obviously, like, we have a really, really strong female lead. I mean, Rachel Weisz is absolutely amazing in it. She's intelligent, brave, and just, she's just an incredible character. And then Brendan Fraser is obviously magical, you know, so he was like my man crush Monday for years and years and still is, because he was just so kind but so brave. And like, He never shut down Evelyn, Rachel Weisz's character, whenever she was expressing absolutely any, you know, concern, or whenever, like, he just trusted her and with, like, what she was doing in the movie and everything. And you don't really see that. I mean, even now, you know, so, and that was, like, in 1999. So I think it was just, like, how the characters interacted with each other was so different from what I had seen before. And then later on, I found out that the first date my parents ever went on, ever, was actually to go watch The Mummy, 1999.
Oh my god.
And it was crazy, because it was on my dad's birthday. Like, they went out on my dad's birthday. So it was,
that's wild.
It was really crazy. And I was like, I don't even know what I did. I was, like, ready to combust, because it was, like, my favorite movie, my favorite everything, and suddenly it was, like, without it, I don't think I would exist. So, you know.
There's something going on in the stars there, you know?
It was crazy. Yeah. It was really weird.
That is wild. Damn. Okay. Well, besides The Mummy, how would you describe your taste in movies?
Ooh. Really simple, I would say. I don't know. I feel like I need to be pickier with movies, and I have been. But honestly, just like, if anything is just kind of fun for me to watch, I will watch it. Like, I will love horrible movies and everything just because, like, they're fun to sit and watch. Like, Ice Age. Why is it so good? Why is Ice Age so good? You know, but it's like, you don't really think about that, especially, like, on a film podcast. You don't think about why Ice Age is such an excellent movie. I really like a good story, you know, something that, you know, makes me feel completed.
And I genuinely love that, because the thing I get the most sick of and is myself, is overanalyzing movies and like not just enjoying them sometimes, but you just gotta let go. And I love hearing your perspective as a person who actually enjoys movies, because sometimes I'm like, do I actually enjoy movies? I don't know. But yeah. Before we move on, just the last question. I'd like to know, like, you know, I feel like you always give kind of weird, not weird or obscure, because they're not. Like, as you said, they're like simple stories, but movies I haven't heard that much of, like, that you've just found somewhere. And you've just, like, watched. But what's a movie you love that you don't think a lot of other people have watched?
This, I would say Ever After. I haven't heard of a lot of people talk about Ever After, and I've, like, kind of looked it, and there's, like, I think maybe one BuzzFeed article, but there's a BuzzFeed article about, like, forks and stuff, so, you know, that doesn't really count. But Ever After, it's basically, like, a Cinderella retelling. It's quite beautiful, and I actually just watched it this morning because I love it. It's just, it's such a weird retelling of Cinderella. Like, it's not like a Cinderella story or like that one with Camila Cabello that came out that I refused to watch.
Oh no, no, stop.
It's really nice. It's, weirdly enough, like, Leonardo da Vinci is in it for some reason, you know? But yeah, but it's not like as dumb as it sounds. It's quite beautiful. Like,
No, I want to watch it.
It's on Disney Plus right now, so it's on UK Disney Plus or whatever, but it's so beautiful. It's just such an intellectual retelling of Cinderella, because obviously Leonardo da Vinci is in it, and he's her fairy godmother, if you really think about it. It's absolutely incredible, and I love it. There's nothing wrong with it at all, ever.
Is there anything else you think the people listening should know about you?
They should know about me.
Yeah. Where do you live? What's your address? And what is your mother's maiden name?
A real guilty pleasure of mine when it comes to TV is NCIS. I love NCIS. I need them to know that, because NCIS, as I've rewatched it, is really weird and can be problematic, but I think I've seen it at least like 50 times, and it's quite good. It's quite good. And I love it. I love NCIS.
So Corinna Viston, one of her first projects for View, which she now works for, is K-Love, which features five Manila women and their lives and how they connect through Korean dramas. And the way she talked about it was just so good. And I can't wait to watch it when it becomes accessible over here. And I'll leave the list of countries where it is accessible down below as well for anyone who might be interested. Representation is really important. And something that still needs a lot of work, because while there might be diversity, diversity does not necessarily mean representation, and I think a lot of people get them conflated, and the people who get them conflated is also the reason why diversity never means representation. So, I wanted to talk about movies where we felt seen. Lauren, when I asked you this, where did your mind go?
Nowhere. It took me a while to really get down to some movies that really made me feel seen, that wasn't like in a spiritual sense, but more in a representational sense. The only one that I can think of, Tortilla Soup is a movie about a single father who's a chef and his three daughters, and they're Latino, you know, so that's really nice, because I mean, I'm Latina, I have two other sisters, and my mom's from Mexico City. My dad is an American white man, but you know, he makes exquisite tortilla soup as well. So it was just more of like the bond between the three sisters, and you know, what the like what bound them culturally, I think was very nice to see.
Mm-hmm. What about TV?
For TV, there have been a lot more Latino women in TV recently, and it is quite nice to see just anyone that looks like you. What was her name in Brooklyn Nine-Nine? The other one, the smart one.
Amy Santiago, played by Melissa Fumero.
Exactly. So it's just kind of nice to see just Latina women existing. And then in that superstore.
Another Amy.
Yeah, the other Amy. I'm so bad with these character names because since I just kind of like watch it mindlessly, it's just like, you know, I'm just watching it. But it is just really nice to see them exist because I think a lot of the issues that I have personally are where 50% of me wants to see like representation in Latin America, like movies about the culture, you know, that isn't just Coco. You know, Coco was excellent. Coco was amazing, but I don't, or like Encanto or whatever, but I want to see, you know, like lives. I mean, personally for me, like being Mexican, I'd love to see people participate in Mexican culture. I want to see more movies that take place in Mexico that isn't a cartel movie, you know, like I'm not asking for much, you know. But then the other 50% of me just wants to see more Latino women participate in film without them being Latina, like being the only aspect of their character, you know, because I feel like you also see that a lot. But, you know, like recently Wednesday came out, which I haven't seen yet, but I mean, I love Jenna Ortega. She's so good in everything that she's in. And, you know, so far, like there's been a lot of really good reviews about that movie. And then America Chavez in this Doctor Strange movie that came out recently, that was excellent because when I was younger, I saw the comics and everything, and it was really nice to see a girl who's Latina with curly hair, you know, that it was nice to see, you know, because you usually don't see that, you know? Yeah, I mean, I'm not gonna lie, it really isn't that much.
No.
When it comes to, you know, seeing myself in like a film or anything, you know?
Yeah. No, exactly. And I do think like exactly what you're saying about, you know, representation that's not, that actually takes place in Latin America is important. And probably what needs to happen is more of a boost and accessibility to films and TV that is produced in Latin America and like the accessibility there. And we were talking with this with Corinna about how amazing it is to see specifically like how Korean dramas, Korean cinema has like just breached through. Like everybody's watching it, you know, and there's access to it and you can watch it wherever you are in the world, pretty much, you know, and that kind of needs to happen. I think some of the moments where I've felt the most seen have not been in movies, have been in TV, specifically Callie, portrayed by Sara Ramirez in Grey's Anatomy, and Rosa, portrayed by Stephanie Beatriz in Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Their stories, like, every time I watch them, they just bring me to tears, and it is so rare to see, it is already so rare to see queer representation of women, so rare to then see of bi women, and so rare to see of bi women where the word bi is being used. You know, there's been a lot of silencing of queer stories since the beginning of cinema, specifically trans stories, and I'm fed up with people saying that their freedom of speech is under attack when like literally queer people have been silent since like the beginning of time, and it's like you're not like you're saying this like oh god, you know, you're like on a talk show, you're saying this being interviewed, you're saying this on like the major news publications, you are not being silenced, and also you have every opportunity to say what you want if you really want to. But people who have been silenced are trans people. Like, if we want to get into that, like, I'm just sick and tired of it. because there's been so much of it recently of people who I used to admire, who just simply, I don't understand how difficult it is to have empathy and to think critically, because the fear-mongering that they use is entirely hypothetical and is not grounded to anything whatsoever, and is something that has been used throughout history repeatedly to advocate against other groups' rights. Like, the patterns are there, and it's crazy to see them being repeated, like, in 2022. So on that note, I really wanted to shout out one of my favorite filmmakers of this century. I want to shout out Isabel Sandoval, who directed Lingua Franca, which is a drama that is available on Netflix, I believe. I watch on Netflix. It might not be there anymore. I'll double check and it'll be down in the description. She wrote it, directed it, and stars in it as the lead. It's about an undocumented trans-Filipino caregiver who's pursuing a marriage to obtain a green card as she moves to the United States. It's incredible, and tells just a really, really beautiful story about a trans woman falling in love with the grandson of an elderly woman that she cares for, and Isabel puts her heart and soul into it. I can't wait to see what else she's going to put out there. I know she directed an ad for Miu Miu and different things, and I love to see it. She's an incredible filmmaker, and we need to see more representation like hers, kind of on that, and like the history of trans representation in film. I really want to recommend this documentary called Disclosure that's on Netflix as well, which just really gets into the history of trans representation and how that also feeds into our society and different prejudices and challenges. I would highly recommend everyone go watch that.
It's something to get worked up about, you know, so it's just exhausting.
It's exhausting and it's just bullshit. We usually ask our guests to give a shout out to a woman that inspires them. Is there somebody you want to shout out?
Yeah, I'll shout out Ella Al-Shamahi. She's a scientist, stand-up comedian. She did a couple of documentaries specializing in, you know, archaeology and just general human behavior. She's incredible, one of the most intelligent people that I've seen, because you don't see a lot of women, especially, in documentaries and everything. You know, you usually see a lot of men kind of leading, you know, the expeditions like that and so on and so forth, but it's so refreshing to see her, and she's so incredible and just brilliant, and I'm obsessed with her because she did a documentary on a Viking woman. I think it's on Disney Plus, so you can go ahead and watch it there. It's really great. She always provides, you know, incredible insights to these kind of topics and whatnot. So it's you know, if you're like a documentary person, I recommend that you go watch her stuff. It's pretty good. If you just want to have a quick intellectual sit, you know, but if you're just down for watching anything fun with, you know, it's just anything fun. It's just fun. It's quite fun. It's quite nice. I enjoy it. I genuinely enjoy that kind of stuff. So it's quite nice. So I would definitely shout her out.
And that is our first episode of this new season. I hope you all enjoyed it. Thank you so much for joining in, every single one of you. Thank you for pressing play. Thank you for listening through if you did. Thank you for following us and supporting us and being part of this project, this journey. It's very, very rewarding, and my favorite part about it all is connecting with all of you listeners. That's why I started doing this in the first place, was to talk with other young women, other filmmakers who wants to share and be honest and, you know, talk about craft and passion and admire it and embrace it, because I think way too often we're told to be modest and to not indulge in our passions, but I absolutely think we should. Now, next week we have a very interesting conversation coming out with Carmen Thompson. She's a film curator and creative producer, and I just can't wait to share it with you. So stay tuned for that. And in the meantime, you can find us on Instagram at Making It Women in Film. And we've also recently joined LinkedIn because it seems to strangely be the only social media site that isn't in hell. So if you want to connect with us on LinkedIn, go do that. We're just Making It Women in Film. You'll find us if you search for it. And send us an email if you have anything you want to talk about, makingitwomeninfilm@gmail.com, or send us a DM. Now, we do have quite a lot to go through. I'm making an effort personally to go through it all and respond as much as I can. However, I am busy and I also have this lovely thing called anxiety, and so sometimes, you know, I just don't get around to it because it's been too late, and I'm very sorry about that. But please know that it is never anything personal, and if I can respond to you in the moment, I absolutely will do. I'm really excited to hear your thoughts about this. If you've gotten this far, please do subscribe wherever you are listening. If you can review it, if you're on Apple Podcasts, please do. Please do give us a 5-star review. Those things help so much more than you can ever imagine. Even on Spotify now, you can give star ratings. So if you just tap that little star, it takes 1 second of your time. I'd dearly, dearly appreciate it. And even more so if you tell your friends about this podcast and share it on your social media, tag us, we'll repost it and hopefully connect through that. So yeah, again, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. I hope it was insightful. I hope you learned something new. I hope that it opened your eyes and inspired you to keep on doing what you do. Yeah, I'll see you next week. Bye. The podcast is produced in collaboration with Bonnie and Bra and LS Films.